The following is a 1500 ESPN Twin Cities production.
Raised on basketball. Raised in front of a computer screen. Raised for covering the game. Raised by Wolves. Now, talking all things Timberwolves with beat writer Derek James, here's Benny Hill with the Raised by Wolves podcast.
You learned a lot. You know, it was, you know, you're playing a number one seed and 65-win team, and they've had a great season, and your margin of error is very small. And so, you know, I thought, you know, when you lose Jimmy, you're losing your best perimeter defender. So that's a problem.
That is Timberwolves head coach, president of basketball operations, Tom Thibodeau.
Yeah, we all know he was the only coach this year to lose a star player, especially on the perimeter. No other team can relate to that.
I did get a kick out of some people were like, well, they lost Butler, and that's why they finished in the eighth seed. Otherwise, they would have been the three. Okay, maybe.
The first time on this podcast just now.
Yeah, that cracked me up because it's like, okay, well, yeah, the Spurs didn't lose Kawhi. And
they lost the Pelicans defensive player of the year.
Yeah, the Pelicans didn't lose Boogie Cousins. And
the Celtics lost Kyrie and Hayward.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, that's what happens. You lose. Sometimes your best players get hurt, and you just have to survive. I mean, the Wolves lost a handful of games without Jimmy Butler that they should have won, even without him. Like that Memphis game that they lost at home, you can't lose that game. That was a winnable game, Jimmy Butler or no Jimmy Butler, and that would have put you at 48-34. And with all the tiebreakers, they probably would have been, what, like the four seed?
Probably.
And been at home against, you know, Utah or whoever. But, yeah, so, I mean, you can't – I mean, that's just the way the cookie crumbles. So, we are the Raised by Wolves podcast. I'm Manny Hill. That's Derek James. This is a post – we call it post-mortem podcast.
Kind of.
Now the season's over.
Kind of the autopsy podcast.
Kind of break it down and sort of look at the season as a whole and everything. We are brought to you by TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand and official TV of the Minnesota Timberwolves. Okay. You and I were both smart guys. We knew that the chances of them beating the Rockets four times out of seven was going to be really, really slim.
They did it zero times in four regular season games, Manny.
Yeah. Boy, you lose to a team 8 out of 9 times in 1 year, man. That's, boy.
They're now 1-7 against the Rockets all time in the playoffs, though.
That's true. They finally got their first playoff win against the Rockets. That's
only took them 20 years. They got there.
So lots to get into here. I think it's hard to. Do you take any positives away from this series? Because it just seemed a little more maddening than anything. I mean, they had a chance to win game one. They didn't do that, which is, on the surface, it's like, fine, whatever. But then the Rockets don't play well in game two, and they still run you out of the gym by 20.
Because
you couldn't score.
And the Rockets are a really good defensive team.
Yeah.
I mean, even that 50-point quarter, it sounds crazy to say. People are like, well, they hit 9 threes and this or that. But it's like, but D'Antoni was right. You know, when you think about it, you know, when you watch the game, when you go back and look at the numbers and everything, Chris Paul said it too. Everyone said it in Houston, that they really set it up with their defense.
Yeah.
I mean, whether it was defensive rebounding, they only forced one steal. That's the incredible thing, but they forced three other live ball turnovers. That just killed the Wolves that they turned into points. And, I mean, just the little things like that just goes to show you just how well you can rebound. You play with energy, you get the ball out, and you get it up the floor quick for easy shots. And especially when you can spread the floor like that, you have so many more options. You know, it's going to open those lanes right up, and they absolutely picked the Timberwolves apart like they deserved. I mean, because this has been the problem all year long, and it's kind of sad that it's now, what, 9 times in a season that they really didn't get much further against the Rockets than they had all year long.
Yeah, and I think the most impressive thing to me with the Rockets is, I mean, we know about the 3-point shooting and Harden's the league MVP and Chris Paul's great and all that, but You touched on it. The defense that they play is really, really underrated. Like, I don't think they get a lot of credit for how good a
defense they're Mike D'Antoni team will never get credit
right.
for the defense.
I mean, people always think Mike D'Antoni, 7 seconds or less, Phoenix Suns,
so they played
Nash, Amari, they didn't play any defense or anything. But this is different. They got guys that guard you. They have versatile defenders. I mean, Trevor Ariza can defend multiple positions. You know, P.J. Tucker can defend
P.J. Tucker is
positions.
A grown man.
Yes. And that's why they brought him in. Like, you see him play, and then you realize, okay, yeah, this is why he was such a big cog for Toronto when they had him mm-hmm. last year, and this is why the Rockets brought him in, because he does, you know, I hate bringing this word up, but he does bring that toughness that Tibbs talks about. Like, he gets it. He knows how to play. He's a defensive-minded guy who can defend multiple positions, and he gets it. And
well, that's what D'Antoni said too about PJ Tucker, and he was just talking about, he's like, all right, so how many shots have we taken in a game? Take 50 shots in a game or whatever it is, and you miss 5 of them. You know, we miss 50 shots as a team and you miss 5. Who cares? Go out there, go get a rebound,
yeah.
play defense, do something else, and the offense will come. And he was totally right. And I think just that attitude and just being able to put that into perspective for your guys just takes so much pressure off of you, you know, when you're having a bad night, not to force it too much. I mean, because, you know, a guy like P.J. Tucker, I mean, he's going to have his off nights. Eric Gordon started the season so slow shooting,
mm-hmm.
but he still steps into every three confidently, not like he's inside his own head. And it's just, there's just such a difference. And maybe some of that is experience and some of it I do think is coaching. Between the two different teams and what you see when guys are struggling, where they're pressing and they're visibly frustrated versus when the Rockets guys are struggling, they just keep in their game.
Price drop. Time to shop. Get to a Nordstrom Rack store today for first dibs on new markdowns. Now score even more, up to 70% off brands everyone loves at Nordstrom Rack. Denim, dresses, sneakers, tops, and more. Plus get genius deals on jackets, sweaters, and boots for the whole family. Shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and save up to 70% with new markdowns. But hurry, deals this great won't last.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
You know what's amazing, too? And I looked this up today because we know the Rockets shoot a lot of three-pointers. They, I think, in terms of three-point percentage, like they shot, I think it was 42 threes a game
mm-hmm.
on average during the regular season, which right. is by far and away like the most in the league.
By like 5 or 6, I think.
Yeah. I think the next closest team was like
37 or 36.
Yeah, it might have. I think it was like New Orleans or somebody that yeah. shot the second most or something. Or maybe Golden State. I can't
remember. Golden State only shoots around 30. They yeah. don't take that many. They just
right.
make them.
They just and it's funny because I looked up the percentage, and Golden State led the way. They shot 39%, just over 39%.
Mm-hmm.
The Rockets were like middle of the pack in
yeah.
3-point percentage.
That's a numbers game.
They're like four. They were like 13th or 14th in the league in 3-point shooting percentage. But they don't care. Like they're gonna shoot a lot more threes because look, this is what we do. This is our offense, and they won 65 games doing this. And it goes back to again what you've talked about several times. And I go back to the example of the Boston Celtics from a couple of years ago. Percentage-wise, they were not a good three-point shooting team, but Brad Stevens just realizes, look, the league, this is where the league is. You've got to be able to, you got to be willing to take a lot of three-point shots just to keep up with teams.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really matter how good a three-point shooting team you are. You just have to take more. And the Wolves are dead last at 22 attempts a game. They made 8 for the season. I mean, you're never going to compete with Houston.
You're not
going
to have
State
a run that's
anybody.
Going to matter until
right.
you fix that.
Yeah.
And I think the thing with Houston is that they don't, I think the better way to put it, not just say that, oh, they take a lot of threes and that's why they're good.
Mm-hmm.
They don't bail out the opposing defense like the Wolves do.
Right.
I mean, the Wolves will settle for mid-range jumpers. You take away Houston's three, What are they going to do? They're going to drive into the lane. They're either going to, you know, throw it to Capella for an alley-oop, or they're going to draw the foul themselves and get to the line for two easy ones. Simple as that. The most efficient shots that you can possibly get. If they don't go for the most value shot, they are going to go right to the rim, or they're going to go to the free throw line for easy uncontested shot attempts.
Yeah, and how often do we see the Rockets, like, throwing up a Hail Mary shot with 2 seconds left on the shot clock?
Yeah.
We never see that with them.
No.
We never see that. But how many times do we see that with the Wolves? Time and time again. It's like every other possession is like that. You're looking at it's 5 seconds left on the shot clock, and then all of a sudden Jimmy Butler's got to throw up some Hail Mary shot, some Hail Mary low percentage shot. And part of it, too, is you watch the Wolves' offense, Jeff Teague or Tyus Jones or whoever it is, whoever the point guard is.
They never should have paid Jeff Teague by the dribble. That was a big mistake.
Well, the other thing, too, is, okay, they'll give up a shot or they'll get a stop and get a rebound, and Jeff Teague is walking the ball up the floor. Like, no, get across the timeline, because by the time they get across the timeline...
Don't let the defense get set.
Yeah. By the time they get across the timeline, there's 16 seconds. You've already burned out almost 8 seconds off your shot clock. And then you get into your offense, and then, like you said, the defense is set, and then next thing you know, you're trying to throw up a Hail Mary shot. Like, get the ball up the floor and then run your offense. I mean, it just, I don't know. They've got to, there's a lot of...
Do you think some of that has to do with Thibodeau yelling like an angry cherry tomato on the sideline? I mean, like, those guys know what to do out there. Like, if you just give them a basketball, they can probably figure out an offense on their own. But yeah, this guy's screaming into, like, okay, what do you want me to do? Okay. They're trying to listen and think. And I think whenever you have...
Got to let them play more free.
Like, yeah, exactly. Because whenever you have a situation that's performative like that and you make guys think more, that's a disaster almost every time.
Yeah, well, and how many times have we said it about Karl-Anthony Towns where he will sometimes start to think too much? You know, if you throw the ball into him on the low block.
Oh, that possession game four against Harden? When you looked at him waiting for the double instead of just going.
Yeah, just go.
Drove me nuts.
Just go. Don't you got the ball. You've got recognize that you've got the mismatch in your favor. Just go. Just go to work. Don't think too much. And then he ends up thinking too much.
Or he has Chris Paul on him. You better be screaming for the basketball.
Yes. Yes.
I have a tiny point guard on me. Throw me the ball.
So when you look at what's going to happen with the offseason now, and we're still weeks away from
anything meaningful happening,
the draft and free agency and all of that, because so many things still have to play out for the playoffs before we even realize, like, who's going to opt out of contracts, who's going to be a free agent, all that stuff. There's so much to speculate on. But I mean, do they need to add a 3-point shooter, or does there need to be more of an emphasis on 3-point shooting with the guys that they have, or is it both?
I think it's both. I mean, that was the thing about the Derrick Rose acquisition. It's like, we need perimeter defense. We need shooting. Better go get Derrick Rose, who doesn't play much defense and just pounds the ball inside. Yeah. Like, that's not helping. Then you have Jamal Crawford. And I don't know how you can think that having both of those guys on the same bench is going to lead to a productive unit. It's just not. Yeah, and it's just the same idea with, you like Lou Williams. Well, I like Lou Williams. I don't like him with Jamal Crawford and Derrick Rose. I don't like Tyreke Evans with Derrick Rose and Jamal Crawford. I mean, you have to have this make some sense. If you had three guys who played defense and shot smart threes, okay, you can live with that. But you can't live with that many gunners coming off the bench who are just thinking, my turn.
Yeah, and they need more. I've talked about this with the Rockets. Like, the Rockets have versatility. The Wolves need more versatility. They have good players, you know. Karl-Anthony Towns, terrific young player. Jimmy Butler, terrific player, two-way player in his prime right now. Jimmy might be the only guy on the roster that actually has, like, versatility where you can have him defend different positions, and he can play a couple of different positions on the floor.
He can probably guard 1 through 3, maybe 4 on a given night.
Right. He can probably guard like a smaller 4, maybe a small ball 4 type of thing. But they don't, Jeff Teague is a good player, but There's not a lot of versatility there. Jamal Crawford can get hot for you once in a while and give you a nice scoring punch off the bench if he's on, but there's no versatility there. Gorgui Dieng, good player when he's confident and when he's playing more.
He can't play multiple front court positions.
Yeah, but there's not a lot of versatility there. I mean, Taj can probably play both front court positions for you, but the problem with Taj is that, you know, Taj is kind of more of the, you know, he had a really good year, and I love him. Like, he was.
But is that the guy you want banging against fives, though?
Right. Well, and the other thing, too, is you probably need more of a stretch four type of guy playing next to Karl Anthony Towns. And, you know, I love Taj to death, but he's not really going to hit anything outside of, like, 12 feet for you consistently.
Wouldn't Thibodeau taking Nemanja Bjelica seriously have solved that problem this season? I mean, he's been so up and down the last couple of years. I mean, honestly, I think if they decided, we're not going to match that, because it's probably a pretty good bet that he doesn't shoot 41% from three again, mm-hmm. and he's up and down, and he misses 15, 20 games a year.
And he's turning 30.
Yeah, I mean, he's just not going to get any better at this point, and he's been so streaky. But that's the type of player, I think, that would slot in nicely next to Karl Anthony Towns. And the team looked good when Bjelica was on next to Towns.
Yeah.
And he was playing well.
I just don't understand, like, how... I mean, when Jimmy got hurt, Belly basically became the starting small forward. And he, you know, he played well for the most part.
I don't even think that's his ideal position.
Right. It's not. But it's like, okay, he played, you know, we got a good look at him at that point because Tibbs' hand was forced. Like, Jimmy was out. So you had to... He had no choice but to start Nemanja Bjelica at that point. Otherwise, it was going to be Georges Hunt or, you know, whoever. But, like, to me, with a guy like Belly, you just got to play him. Like, even when Jimmy Butler came back, like, Belly went back to not even knowing, like, how many minutes he was going to play.
You could have a really weird, fun lineup with Belly, Towns, and Jimmy on the floor together.
Yeah. Give it a shot. Try it.
And maybe your weird two-point guard lineup, like, but instead you're going to put Jamal Crawford in there. I don't get it. It's not like Bjelica is very inexperienced in the NBA. This is his third year. But he's played in EuroLeague, and he's been successful there. So he's not even inexperienced when it comes to higher levels of basketball.
Belly does not strike me. I mean, he's inexperienced, but he doesn't strike me as a guy that would be too overwhelmed by the moment.
No.
You know what I mean? Where, you know, you get to the playoffs and the lights are even brighter and there's more pressure and all that. Like, Belly's just
Aaron
a guy Aflalo that...
He's not afraid to... He's not backing down from anyone.
Yeah, but what do you do with him? I mean, because he's restricted, right?
Yeah.
So you're probably... Just with the way the cap situation is, they're probably not going to...
Well, and Derrick Rose is getting the full mid-level.
Oh, my God. Okay, can we talk about Derrick Rose for a second?
We then probably we'll go back should. Because okay. the rest of this conversation is going to be really hard.
Look, he played... He gave them a spark. All right? He gave them a spark that... They needed at the when they brought him in, like they just needed bodies at that point. Like Jimmy was hurt, and you know there just wasn't a whole lot. You know there wasn't really a lot out there on the market. There wasn't a lot of guys like out there on the street. I mean, I would have liked to have gotten like Marco Bellinelli or something because of the shooting angle, but you know there just wasn't a whole lot of options out there. So you know, and he played with Tibbs in Chicago, so I get it. You bring him in for the rest of the year, see if he can help you.
Didn't Bellinelli play with Tibbs in Chicago?
Or he did. I believe he did. Yeah, which is
I thought he was on a Del Negro team, possibly, but it was close.
Maybe I should look that up. But nonetheless, like okay, you brought in Derrick Rose. You needed a body. You needed another bench guy for depth purposes more than anything. Forget about the position and the size and all that stuff. Fine. And he came in. He was a disaster in his first game against
first
the Warriors.
Couple.
Yeah, first couple games, it was really, really bad. But, you know, and he started to play a little bit better, and then you said, okay, well, this is fine. I can live with this for the rest of the year. I'm sorry. I know he showed some flashes and he did a nice job in the playoffs, but the bottom line is you still got beat in five games. You still got your butts whooped for the most part.
He's not going to shoot 70% again from
He's not going to shoot 70% from three. Like, he shot 23% for the season.
He's one of the 12 worst shooters in NBA history, too.
Yeah, so, I mean, just this idea. Look, if you get through the summer and you're in a similar position that you were in last year where, you know, you went and got Teague and you got Taj and, you know, you needed another body because you just didn't have enough players, and you just looked at Shabazz and you said, okay, come back for the minimum. We'll bring you back for the minimum. If that's a similar situation with Derrick Rose this summer where you just, you know, you whiffed on a couple of guys in free agency with the mid-level and all that stuff.
Doesn't this feel more, though, like a Darko situation where they offer him a multi-year deal?
Ugh, that is what I'm afraid of. And I'm sorry, I want nothing to do with that.
I think it would be...
I want nothing to do with that.
I think you can say that, yeah, the dozen or so good games that he had here were fun, and they helped the team for sure.
You thank him for his service, but you say, we got it. We got other needs.
You would
other
be more foolish to let this override a six-year sample, is really right. My big thing. It doesn't change the wear and tear that's already on his body or his struggles. Or the fact that he really doesn't fit a modern NBA style at all.
And guess what, folks? He turns 30 next year. Like, he's not old. I'm not saying he's old.
He's getting
there. But he's not going to get any better. Okay?
No.
Like, he's not going to progress and get any better. Like, Derrick Rose is what he is right now. So, if you're thinking that what we saw in these handful of games against the Rockets... 7 out of 10 from three, and he's getting to the rim and finishing. Like, I just don't buy that we're going to see that. Except, and the other thing too is, Derrick Rose isn't an idiot. He's playing for a contract.
Yeah,
he's trying to get paid by somebody. Like, because probably in maybe in his mind, he still thinks that he is, you know, a starting caliber point guard, and you know, I don't know. I don't know what he's thinking, but...
I would bet a lot of money that he would very comfortably still thinks he's that player.
But, like, he is... You have to take that into account, that he is... Okay, he got to the Cavs this year. They let him go. He's probably a little bit sour about that. I don't think there's any question that he came to the Wolves with a bit of a chip on his shoulder. Sort of this, I'm going to show everybody that I can still play. And so he went all out. And he's trying to get another contract. Like,
can we just not pretend like these games where, I mean, if he wasn't making shots and he was still taking 17 or 16 shots in 20 minutes, we would have a big problem with that, right? So I think a lot of this is the fact that his efficiency, he's shooting like 53, 54% in the playoffs, and career, he's in the mid-40s.
Yeah.
Like, you have to look at a lot of this and say, this is not sustainable, and you don't want to invest heavily in this. I mean, even if, you know, you want to say early on, hey, minimum deal, we'll take you back, you have a job. And
right.
with Tom Thibodeau, he'll always have a job. There is no need to negotiate against yourself right away and go, well, here's the mid-level. Oh, and now we have this mess in the backcourt, in the frontcourt to sort through.
Right. Like I said, I think if you're in a similar situation like last year where you just whiffed on a couple free agents and you weren't able to make like an impact trade or anything and you just need another body and you get to August – and you need another body on the roster, and if Derrick Rose is still out there, then okay, fine, bring him back. Bring him back for a 1-year minimum deal. But I'm not exhausting my entire, if I'm the Wolves, I'm not exhausting my entire mid-level to bring him back based on a 5-game sample in a series in which you got beat in 5 games.
Like, and let's not forget that he came here and got hurt pretty darn quick,
yeah.
too.
Yeah. And that is still a question mark about, you know, the injuries and the durability. And
so he can come here. He can continue to play well, probably not at the same level of efficiency because he's never done it. But there's always that chance that he gets hurt.
Yeah.
And it's just one of those things. And it's unfortunate that his career has gone that way. But once, you know, those injuries really do add up.
Okay. So.
Belly?
Yeah, belly. I don't really see a way where he's back.
No.
Just from the standpoint is I feel like somebody is going to offer him like a, you know, maybe a 3-year, 20, like I don't think that we're going to see as much like free agent splurging as we've seen the last two off seasons. Just because I don't think the cap, how far is the cap going up? Do we know?
It's, I don't think it is.
It's not going,
I think it's staying flat.
So I don't think we're going to see a lot of teams like splurging on money, but you
that's
know,
the
Belly
thing.
Could get a 3-year, like what, $27, $28 million.
That'd be
like $9 million a year. I could see somebody throwing that at him.
Give me 1 minute. So I was doing some research for the piece that came up today, Friday, on 1500ESPN.com about the Wolves could do, and just kind of looking at, you know, everything from the perspective. They're going to be right against the luxury tax.
Mm-hmm.
I think next season they're going to be at $117 million as of right now. The luxury line is $119.
Mm.
So they are very close. And the thing is, not a lot of teams actually have bountiful cap space of more than $10 million. This is from ESPN, published in February.
So maybe Belly's not going to get that much.
Atlanta, Brooklyn, Chicago, Dallas, L.A., Philly, and Phoenix have between $17 and $21 million. Otherwise, nobody else has more than $10 million in cap space.
Mm.
So, I mean, someone can still pay him quite a bit. Oh, wait, I might have read that wrong. No, it was more than 15. Why did they put an alphabetical order rather than...
And some of those teams are probably going to re-sign guys, right?
Probably. I mean, I think Philly's going to try to bring back J.J. Redick.
Yeah. Probably.
It's unbelievable how much talent they have and how much cap room
I know.
They have.
Redick had, what, $23 million for one season?
I thought it was 17.
I thought it was like 20-plus, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, no, you're right, you're right.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, maybe from that... Maybe from based off of that, then maybe Belly won't get that much. But I think because they're so close to the luxury tax that I could see somebody swooping in and offering him something like a 2 or 3 year deal, and the Wolves probably having to say goodbye.
I think you take that chance.
Yeah.
Like for all the reasons that we listed before we had our Derrick Rose interlude. I'm comfortable taking that chance, and I can live with him having 2 or 3 good years, because if he goes to any of the teams on this list,
mm-hmm.
aside from the Sixers, it's not really going to matter what he does.
Right.
Like, great, go bomb threes in Atlanta and Brooklyn. Go be the star of the Mavericks before they start to, you know, get their young core together. I mean, yeah, whatever. It's really just not going to matter.
Yeah, so we'll see how it goes this offseason. I think... You know, Gorgie's another one that I'm looking at and saying they got to figure something out with him. I mean, if they're
he's
not
going to cost them $26 million in the last year of his deal at this rate.
Yeah, just because of the tax money and everything.
Yeah.
I mean, they got to get real creative this summer. Like they're going to have to find a way to move one of these.
You know what they can't do?
Contracts.
They cannot give up a pick. This franchise has been too fast and loose with their draft picks.
I know.
And it has undercut them just about every single time.
Yeah, and you need...
This team really needs it.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, we talked about this a couple weeks ago. Like, they need to... This Oklahoma City pick needs to turn into something. Like, you need to get... You don't have to draft a superstar. I'm not saying draft the next Kawhi Leonard here with this pick, but you got to... It's got to be somebody that can contribute. And we're already concerned about Justin Patton now because he was a 16th pick last year that you got in the Jimmy trade.
He's already on his second foot surgery.
He's already on his second foot surgery, and he's a 7-footer. And that's always concerning when you're talking about 7-footers that have foot and ankle and
fractures
other injuries.
And
yeah, it's just, I mean, I'm rooting for Justin Patton because I think there's something there with mm-hmm. him in terms of ability. But... You got to get something out of this Oklahoma City pick. Even if you are able to move it for, you know, a semi-young player that can contribute for you significantly.
Like Milwaukee getting Chris Middleton from Orlando, or not Orlando.
I think it was Detroit,
Chris Middleton,
wasn't
Detroit.
It?
Yeah. I was thinking Tobias Harris, but Tobias Harris is another good example.
Yeah.
He got kicked around a few times before he really came into his own. So, I mean, there are those kind of guys you can get out there. I think teams are getting smarter, though.
Yeah.
And it's not as easily had. And we're going to find out, I think, a lot about this front office. And actually, that does bring me to one of the things that I would do. Tom Thibodeau cannot do both jobs. It's just the way the league is trending. I think every team, Detroit, the Clippers, have tried going down this road and realized, all right, you need to focus on just coaching. And Stan Van Gundy might not even have the coaching job to fall back on anymore. Because right. They're going to figure that out pretty quick. Doc Rivers already lost his front office title, and he's just the coach now. And it makes sense because, I'm sure we've talked about this before, there's no one holding Tibbs accountable.
Yeah,
at all. He's not answering to anyone. There's no impartiality or objectivity here. It's just Tibbs once Tibbs gets. And I think it's enabled him really just to coach less and just bring in his own guys, his own veterans that he's familiar with, rather than bring these guys and be like, all right, so this is what we need to do to be, you know, to be successful here. These are the things we need to work on, rather than, well, screw it. I don't want to teach you. I don't have the patience for it. So I'm going to get someone who just already gets it, that I know gets it. And that's not coaching. That's just lazy.
Yeah, and it's amazing when you think about, okay, they make the playoffs for the first time in 14 years, and you know, now they're out. But now you just look at this summer, and there's a lot of question marks with a lot of guys. The only guys you really don't have any real question marks about in terms of, like, their future with the team is, you know, probably Towns and Wiggins. I mean, and just Wiggins from the standpoint of, you know, he's signed the contract. Now they could try and move him if they don't, you know, if they are sort of pulling the plug on him and giving up on him, but you're probably not going to get that much in return for him.
I was going to say, I'd be selling incredibly low, but yeah. I don't know if the price would go, you know, if his value would increase much either.
Right. But there's question marks with everybody. I mean, you know, is Jamal going to opt in to the second year of his deal? You know, Jimmy Butler, that is the ultimate, like, question mark is
I do think they need to have the Sam Presti conversation.
Yeah.
Like Sam Presti had with Russell Westbrook after KD left. He was like, hey, what do you want to do?
Mm-hmm.
Are you thinking you want to be here long term, or, you know, do you have your eyes on elsewhere? And he locked him down. I know Jimmy hasn't been here that long. And I know that, you know, he's apparently been frustrated that some of the other guys don't get it, which I don't think is uncommon. Like, I think Jordan and Kobe and KG and all those guys had the same problem. Like, why aren't you just as good as me? Why don't you want to work as hard as me? Yeah. Why don't you just get it like I do? And I think that's a little unfair sometimes, but I think they expect a lot, and that's what's helped them become great. So, I mean, I think they'll have to figure that out with Jimmy if he wants to be here, if he can put up with it. I don't want to say you give him input into the roster, but maybe just, you know, you keep him in the loop as far as to what you're doing and just come and say, hey, what are your ideas? What are you thinking? You know, who have you been talking to? We like this guy. What do you think this team needs? You know, just keep him involved and make him feel like he has a stake, you know, in the future of this team.
And the interesting thing is Tibbs is the guy that ultimately has to have that conversation, right? Just because he has the relationship with Jimmy, obviously, that goes back, but he's also the president of basketball operations. Now, Glenn Taylor, as the owner, probably has to be involved in these conversations too, because Glenn is signing the checks. But
and Glenn always treats us like, you know, it's like his group of friends.
And with Tibbs and Jimmy, like, that's going to be very that would be a very interesting conversation, because obviously those two guys they have a really good relationship, and I know Jimmy thinks the world of Tibbs and vice versa. So it's kind of like, can those two guys objectively have a conversation about the future of the franchise? I think that's going to be a big question. Can they objectively have a conversation? Because it seems to me like there is, like, it's those two guys, they're on the same page, and they're trying to get, you know, and probably, you know, maybe even Taj too. You can maybe throw him into that mix too, but like, those guys are on the same page, and they're trying to get Wiggins and Towns and you know, and Tyus and Gorgie and all these other guys to buy into what we're doing and what we want.
I think T gets it, too.
Yeah.
He always has kind of a nose for those bigger moments and knows, like, all right, this is not the time to, you know, F around.
Yeah. And Teague is another guy, too, that you might have to think about, like, you know, he had a really good year.
Because he has, what, one and a player option left?
One and a player option. So, you know, and it's a pretty hefty cap hit at $19 million. So you got to think, okay,
It's better than Corgi or Wiggins' contract, though.
Yeah, and but because it's better, you know, there's probably more value there. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I'm not saying
he's
I want
good.
Jeff gone, but he's still good. He had a really good year, and
you got to free up more space to give Rose more than the mid-level for 5 years. And no ownership in the team once he retires.
But the thing of it is like that is sort of the thing you have to think about if you are going to try and move Jeff Teague, then well you gotta find another point guard. You know, or maybe you get a point guard in return for him, but I don't know. So there's a lot to think about, and there's a lot of different guys that they've gotta make some decisions on. Corgi Jang, man,
if you're not going to use him, you have to get rid of him.
Yeah, you got to find a way to move his contract. If you're not going to, if he's going to play 14 minutes a night and you're going to bench him.
He's going to play like that?
Yeah. I mean, Corgi did not have a good year.
And I think it was because of how much he played. He is another guy like Bielitsa who needs his minutes.
More.
He needs his reps to get a feel for the game. Just give him a couple touches early and find ways to get him something better than that mid-range shot. Like I've always said, that's like the frozen pizza of shots for that team. Like you think of like all the better things you get after dinner, you're like, I don't feel like going out. I don't feel like cooking. I'm just going to make a pizza.
So we'll let Corgi take that shot.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh, couldn't get anything better. We'd like a three, but we can't get it. That's too hard. Corgi, elbow.
Yeah. So, I mean, isn't it amazing too? Like when Corgi first signed that extension, we're thinking, man, you know, that's a pretty fair deal.
I thought
for
he was
going to
get a lot more.
Yeah, because we looked at, because that was the summer of 16. That was coming off the summer of 16.
And that's just the money that guys got. Right. Like, they were getting
$20
million.
Timothy Mozgov got $64 million or 62 or whatever it was.
Didn't
from the Lakers.
Didn't Plumlee get an exorbitant amount of money too?
Maybe.
Something
like
that.
Miles Plumlee or Mason Plumlee or one of them.
I can't
get them straight. Yeah, I always get them mixed up. So, you know, you see Mozgov get his deal from the Lakers, and you're like, and then you see like Luol Deng and Joakim Noah and those guys get these big contracts, and Corgi gets like a similar deal, and we're thinking, well, Gorgie's, you know, he's a younger player and he's coming off a nice year, and I mean, this is a fair contract for him, but now it's like, oh man, you know, like it's just not.
It's more of a burden than
yeah,
anything.
Yeah, it is, and. You know, with the way the league is going right now, I mean, you does it make sense to have Corgi Jang on the roster?
Now, I say this knowing that I love Taj, but why did you need both when Taj is essentially a better version of Corgi Jang?
Right.
I mean, if I had to pick, I would absolutely choose Taj in a minute. I mean, even if money wasn't, you know, an issue.
Yeah, I
money
think that's
was
fair.
All equal.
I think that's fair. And, I mean, there's two ways you can look at that. You can say, why did you go get Taj when you already had Corgi? Or you could look at it and say, why did you extend Corgi when you could have just waited and went and got Taj in the offseason, and then figuring it out Corgi would have been an easier type of
situation. Because you probably could have come back to Corgi and had that same conversation.
Yeah.
Maybe you got to pay a little more, but you still could have figured it out if you wanted to.
Yeah.
And honestly, if you lost Corgi Jang, you could be fine.
Yeah, I think you could probably survive. Just like if, you know, Derrick Rose doesn't return, I think they can probably.
Yeah. Oh, you wouldn't know from Twitter. Apparently, six pretty meaningful games.
Yeah, he just gives it his all, right? He's just giving it his all. That's all. Anyway, fun season though. I mean, I know a lot of people were.
Screw the draft pick. Game three is worth it. A lot of fun to be there, be a part of, and seeing the fans, you know, finally get what they'd been waiting for. Totally worth it.
Yeah, and you know what? I think it's, you know, people are anxious and they're angry about certain things, and, you know, some people want Tibbs fired and all that. Like, I get it. And you know what? I think in the grand scheme, it's a good thing because that means people care.
Yeah.
And that there's intrigue and that there's interest in this team. And
the team would have a real crisis if people didn't care.
Right.
If they were indifferent.
And there have been some days. There have been some days where it's been more like, you know, apathy.
We have
than,
a basketball team
interest.
Still.
Right. Exactly. That will wrap things up for us for this week. A reminder, we are brought to you by TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand and official TV of the Minnesota Timberwolves. We'll be back next week with another edition. We'll talk some more playoff basketball. There's still basketball left to be played. even if the Wolves aren't playing any games. Yeah. You can find us on iTunes, podcast1.com, 1500ESPN.com as well. For Derek, I'm Manny. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.